Good evening, and welcome to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio.
Los Angeles's only.
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 Solo.
El solo solución para el micro
broadcasting
del Los Angeles.
So our bilingual host tonight is Steve Cato, as always. Actually, how many languages do you feel fluent in, Steve?
Just French and French, English and French.
You do a little German sometimes.
I do a little German, but I wouldn't go fluent. And right. A little Danish.
Okay.
And a little Japanese.
Sure.
And a little Spanish.
And I'm Nicholas Miller.
How many languages, Nicholas?
Just one, really.
Inglese?
Yeah.
Para inglese.
I'm the only monolingual translator I know.
It's tough. The words are hard.
Mm-hmm.
The language is tough.
So do you have your tickets for Comic-Con?
I don't. I actually just surrendered my tickets to the Pan Am Games squash final.
Ouch. But you got some fancy wine out of it, right?
I did.
Great.
I did. I got some slick Chinon.
Chinon.
Chinon. I got some slick Chinon.
How's the terroir there?
It's good. I recently read an article about the wine itself, and it was apparently it's well, I'll show it to you later. We'll talk about it later.
There was a bicycle trip my brother and I took through the Loire Valley many years ago, and we took some LSD. And ended up in Chino.
Oh, hey.
It was very frightening.
Yeah, why?
It was something our parents had set up for us, and we were just very ill-prepared for the situation. We ended up driving through a French military base where they were doing target practice.
Oh, shit, that would be frightening.
That wasn't cool, yeah. They threw rocks at us. And then we ended up in this woman's house who the entire interior was pink. She was wearing all pink, and she had, as far as I could tell, the world's largest collection of umbrellas. At least France's largest collection of umbrellas.
So this is like the Pasadena Bunny Museum, but for umbrellas.
Yeah. So all of this was very strange. And then she took us to this restaurant. We felt obliged to eat, even though it seemed physiologically impossible at the moment.
Why?
Because of the drugs.
Oh, right. So you're just like, we can't eat this food.
Yeah. You know, in certain states, when you look at the food and you just see the shimmer of it.
At what point of the cycling situation did you guys take the drugs?
Well, it was, I wasn't hip to it, but my brother kept offering me an Altoid in the morning. And at some point I was just like, are you trying to say something about my breath? And he was like, no, dude, I brought special Altoids. So
your brother had been tripping the whole time.
No, he had waited for me to get hip to it.
Mm.
And then it turned into a very long day. Because not only could we not read the signs, but it wouldn't have helped too much if we could.
Were you tripping that deeply?
I don't know. I guess.
No visuals? Like, they explain the... fill in the details.
I mean, definitely a loss of sense of direction.
Okay.
Inability to read the directions that were printed for us, which are also written...
French.
No, they're written in English, but... I'm bad with these kind of grammar terms, but it was like a first person singular almost, or like not a first person, second person singular. I don't know, but basically it would say like, you are now seeing a tree,
right?
You are now turning left. It was like the way that maps are read on your phone now, because it follows along with you in real time.
Right.
But they were printed. You had to turn the page, and so there's a lot of jokes about that. And just trying to genuinely figure out where the hell we were going.
Sounds ideal.
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful. What kind of bikes did you guys have?
I don't remember. It was just some prefab bike tour. I think they were crappy.
Hmm.
But they had lots of storage.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Practical, but not cool.
Yeah. And the night before, we stayed in this little cottage, and the owners made wine, and so they gave us all these small bottles, which we drank instead of water, which probably also wasn't wise.
Sounds unwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us about tonight's guest.
Tonight's guest has come all the way to us from Brooklyn, New York. Have you ever been to Brooklyn, New York?
I have.
Mm-hmm. So she's here, and she turns out to be an expert on giving advice.
Oh, shit.
And judging out at our rather sizable studio audience tonight. I think there are some people out there that could use some advice.
There's some problems out there, probably. Yeah. We actually do have an outrageously large studio audience right now.
Gunther is shitting his pants.
We have twice our average studio audience right now.
More money, more problems. Which says a lot, yeah, definitely. So I think we should maybe get right to it. What do you think, Steve?
Same. Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, well, everyone, please move to the edge of your seats. We are ready for some serious advice from none other than Brooklynite Julia Peltefeldman.
Peltefeldman.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. It's so good to be here. I'm so glad to be here. My name is Julia Peltefeldman, and I'd like to speak to you tonight about advice, and specifically the format of the advice column. This is a radio show and not a column, but if you are in need of advice, I'd like to extend the offer that advice is to be had for the asking this evening. If you have a problem, an etiquette problem, a relationship problem, an ethical quandary, an etiquette problem, or any of the other categories that we'll be addressing tonight, or other categories yet to be comprehended in the advice universe, you are very welcome to text them to me, and I will be addressing those problems later on in the show. The number is 610-716-7380. That's 610-716-7380. Send me a text message. You are responsible for any charges, and I will get to your questions later on in the show. I'd like to open by sharing one of my favorite advice columns. This is from Judith Martin, also known as Miss Manners. It's from December 2007. Miss Manners, if you don't know, has a very particular niche in the etiquette advice market. There have been some contenders, but they are not worthy of discussion. There's a gentleman who works for the New York Times who is quite bad, actually, but I'm not here to I'm not here to criticize newcomers. Miss Manners is established. And now on to the question. December 10th, 2007. Dear Miss Manners, one of your gentle readers used the phrase "people of breeding" and indicated that they know certain rules of etiquette. I cannot help but think of dogs and horses as objects of breeding rather than people. Is the phrase still an acceptable way to refer to people well-versed in basic etiquette? And the reply from Miss Manners. Gentle reader, people do breed, Miss Manners is given to understand. But you are quite right that those who believe that it is something about which to brag in public cannot be considered polite. At the risk of ruining the joke, I like to start this particular talk that I give with this advice column because it exhibits a lot of the things that I think characterize good advice. It's funny, but it's not too funny. And it gets at something I think very fundamental to Miss Manners. We're going to be looking at a variety of advice columns this evening. And even though Miss Manners, the etiquette column, would seem to be the most frivolous, I find again and again that it is the most profound, in addition to the most useful. For Miss Manners, etiquette is not a superficiality. It is not a dispensable triviality that is used by people who are afraid to speak the truth. As some would have it, but rather it is shorthand for civilization itself. That etiquette is the way that we relate to each other with an intent not to do each other harm. And to the charge that is often leveled against her, often in her column itself by ignorant gentle readers, that etiquette is a way that the wealthy who have had a certain upbringing lord it over, so to speak, those who have not had that upbringing. Miss Manners is quite the opposite, that the rules of etiquette are indeed that you must treat everyone exactly the same, and that there are not some people who are more worthy of politeness than others, that in fact etiquette is that which makes us all equal. And I think that comes through quite clearly in this simple, rather sarcastic response from Miss Manners: people do breed, but breeding has nothing to do with politeness. Etiquette, of course, is but one subject of this nation's great history of advice columns. You all out there in Radio Land, regardless of your age, are probably familiar with Ann Landers and Dear Abby. Now, Ann Landers and Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren was her full fake name, were not the first advice columnists, but they were certainly the first to achieve, and indeed the last to achieve, the kind of rock star success that has made them household names. The advice columns started out as a kind of space filler in a local newspaper, but it became something more through these two women. It may seem, if you're familiar with Landers and Van Buren, that there's a rivalry there. But in fact, the story is a good deal more complicated than that. But before getting back into these specifics, perhaps I'll share with you a few classic examples of these two advice giants. Dear Abby, this is from January 11, 1966. Dear Abby, I am in love with two boys and don't know which one to marry. First, there's Andy. He's sort of blonde and sells insurance. Mama likes him, which helps a lot. He's very reliable and seems anxious to get married. Then there's Tony. He's dark and sort of gives me the creeps. But they're awfully nice creeps, if you know what I mean. I don't know which one I like best. In the daytime, I like Andy, but I believe I like Tony better at night. Which one do you think would make the best husband for me? Andy or Tony? And Abigail Van Buren's response: Dear Andy or Tony, don't marry either one if it's a toss-up. Date others and make comparisons. When the one comes along, you'll flip your lid, not a coin. Now, a few things strike me about this particular column that can be more or less said to characterize Van Buren's practice. It's a short and rather pithy response, breezy, with a kind of colloquial flavor to it. There's also a kind of mild disdain, almost, for the writer. Not disdain so much as dismissal. But at the same time, she's fulfilling her mandate as the giver of advice by zooming out from this problem and seeing, and this, as I will repeat often this evening, is the crux of advice giving. The problem has to be abstracted to something larger. And more importantly, the giver of advice has to see everything that isn't being said. Because to give good advice, one must understand the issues that the letter writer has failed to see him or herself, which of course won't appear in the letter. And what Abigail Van Buren has understood in this case is that she's speaking to a very young woman who, in her infatuation with two young men, doesn't realize that she has a lot more experimentation available to her, and that her uncertainty is not a sign that they're both the men for her, but rather that she has other options. Dear Abby can occasionally be tremendously unhelpful. I point you to a letter from March 10th, 1960. Dear Abby, you are my last hope. I am still looking for a man I met in La Crosse, Wisconsin during the Second World War. We only spent one evening together, but it was the most wonderful evening of my life. All I know is that he had Herb tattooed on him, and he's from Sioux Falls. I thank you. Signed, Can't Forget Him. And Abigail's response, Dear Can't, he went that away. I guess that's a joke in 1960. But starting from that premise, even accepting that he went that away is a funny joke, it seems a little cruel. But that's Abby for you. Now, let's move to Ann Landers. And you'll see that despite being an approximately exact contemporary of Abigail Van Buren, Landers has a really different flavor. Excuse me, technical difficulties. As I mentioned, that number is 610-716-7380. One more time, 610-716-7380 is the number to text with your advice questions. My line is blowing up, but that doesn't mean that your question won't be the one that makes it through. Now, Ann Landers, I have to say, not to prejudice you, good listeners of Radioland, might be my very least advice giver that I have yet to encounter. Let's see if we can't find out why together. Dear Mrs. Landers, I've been married 4 years, have 2 children, and am expecting a third soon. My husband has been chasing around town with women for the past 7 months. When I told him that I was getting a separation, he promised to change his ways and behave himself. I have no money for attorney's fees, and I cannot work. Shall I try to borrow the money from relatives, or should I wait and see what happens? Signed, Troubled Wife. Dear TW, you have every right to blow a gasket. This character does not deserve a family, as of now. But since he has promised to mend his ways, give him another chance. Try to persuade him to go with you to a marriage counselor. See if, together, you can't find out what's gone wrong with your marriage. Let him know, too, if there's any more extramarital activity, you're giving him the heave-ho. Now, you've probably remarked immediately my principal problem with this advice is that it is completely unhelpful. This advice is so obvious as to almost be insulting. Then again, it could be on the letter writer's part to a certain extent that she has presented her problem in a certain way. Shall I try to borrow the money from relatives, or should I wait and see what happens? Well, what's the argument against waiting? There doesn't seem to be one, leading me to believe that this is the best way she has available to her to phrase her problem. But her problem is really something more profound about the relationship with her husband. The job of the advice columnist is to answer the question that has not been asked. And Ann Landers has failed in this instance. Now, Landers and Van Buren were born 17 minutes apart on July 4th, 1918. They were born Esther Pauline Friedman Lederer and Pauline Esther Friedman Phillips, were their names when they died. But yes, Esther Pauline Friedman, Pauline Esther Friedman, twin sisters, the greatest advice columnists in terms of sheer readership that the genre has ever seen. Ann And what many don't realize is that this advice dynasty goes on. Dear Abby has been continued. Unfortunately, as a footnote, there isn't really time this evening to delve into the essentially Jewish nature of advice giving in America and the conspicuously Protestant-sounding names adopted by all Jewish advice givers, because they are all indeed originally nearly all Jewish. Dear Abby is now continued today by the daughter of the original Abby, and her cousin, the daughter of Ann Landers, runs her own advice column, Dear Prudence, which, being to my mind of second tier, I think does not need to be addressed this evening. So let's move on. An entirely different category, and one that I think presents a very interesting case study, is that of Dan Savage, who is perhaps best known among the young listeners out there. And if there are any members of our studio audience here today who are in the 15 to 35 age group, and I'm guessing there's quite a few of you, judging from what I can see through the studio lights, you might very well be more familiar with Dan Savage than with Dear Abby or Dan Landers. Dan Savage, who has called himself America's most prominent gay man, is a sex advice columnist. And it's impossible to discuss Savage without commenting on the past 15 years through which he's been writing. 15 years ago, the internet was a very different place. And he served a crucial function, giving people access to basic information about sex that was not available to them anywhere else. Now, a lot of, largely through his work, I mean, I think there are many objectionable things about him as a personality, but I have to give him a lot of credit. I think he's done more good than all of these other advice columnists put together. His function has then shifted away from this information-giving capacity to a certain extent, although there are exceptions to that, as we'll see, and more towards a very essential advice-giving faculty. He answers relationship questions, whether they are essentially sexual in nature or not. For example, what would you say, this is the question, what would you say to a woman who is forcing you to choose between her and the photos of your late first wife? Signed, a youngish widower. The response from Savage, goodbye and good riddance, you cruel and psychotic piece of shit. Now, you have surely remarked that the use of swear words, are we under FCC regulations? Oh, good. The use of swear words is certainly a notable feature of Savage's writing, presumably to help him relate to that 15 to 35 demographic that was mentioned. But there's also a straight talk that I actually think recalls more than anything else the original mid-60s advice of Abigail Van Buren. Here, Savage is saying something funny, he's saying something pithy, but he's also giving genuine advice. This is a man who, it seems, and Savage is assuming, much assuming, has to go on in any kind of advice situation, that this man isn't sure what to do. And the advice that Savage knows he's often there to give is to make to allow people to do to allow people to disrupt relationships that are bad for them. This is surprisingly difficult, and this is an important function that he has. Now, to get more specific, dear Dan Savage, I'm a straight man with a bisexual wife, married a little over 2 years. She got me started listening to your podcast, a new advice medium that we unfortunately don't have time to explore in detail this evening, and opened up my mind to alternative relationships. Arrangement at present is a semi-open kind of thing. She gets some female action on the side, and I, in theory, get a happier, lustier wife who will, if her friend is game, include me in threesomes. Our first threesome is happening soon. An old friend slash sex buddy and my wife are mutually attracted, and plans are being made. There are some red flags. My wife, who had previously gotten off on the idea of seeing me with another woman, has decreed penetration off limits. She really doesn't seem all that thrilled about my having any contact with the other woman at all. Meanwhile, the friend has told my wife that she can include me if she wants, but it's my wife that the friend wants. What do I do? I seem to be the only one who wants me to even be involved in this threesome. Do I just keep all my attention on my wife? Do I just watch or even stay out completely? I love my wife and don't want to create conflict, but I feel like I'm getting the short end of the stick here. Now, this may seem a specific problem. Now, this is something certainly that Dan Savage can't compare to the sort of advice of a Dear Abby or indeed even a Carolyn Hacks, in that these problems are often less universal. And yet, this is a problem that still does not have solutions in the greater society. There are not books that can be read. There is even limited reliable information on the internet. This is a true advice situation. Advice is needed. And Dan writes, I would skip this particular threesome if I were you. There's no bigger boner killer than knowing you're not wanted. And you need to have a talk with your spouse. You signed off on her being with other women on the condition that you, in the context of the occasional threesome, would get to be with other women too. If your wife isn't into that, if she's too threatened by the prospect of seeing you with slash inside another woman to keep up her end of the bargain, you need to renegotiate your agreement about openness, and reverting to a closed relationship should be on the table. That said, foregoing penetration the first time you have a three-way, isn't that monumental a sacrifice? If oral and mutual masturbation are still on the menu. Now, there are a lot of things that I like about this advice. First of all, unlike Ann Landers, Savage always takes the letter writer seriously. He also is moving out of the specific situation and abstracting from his experience as an advice columnist, as well as abstracting from what he's not hearing. He's understanding that there have been certain conversations, but he's realizing that it's very likely that those conversations have ended at a certain point. That this kind of negotiation between the spouses about what the open relationship means have had certain boundaries that are shifting. And Savage is suggesting, which may seem obvious, but the letter writer is, after all, writing for this information, they need to renegotiate those boundaries. That, again, is another point that I very much appreciate in this body of work, is that the advice is very specific. Savage rarely tells someone to be herself or to work harder. He rarely pulls one of my least favorite moves of the second Abigail Van Buren, who, when she's confronted with a problem she cannot solve, tells the letter writer that they have her sympathy, which I find nearly infuriating in its uselessness. A sympathy columnist would be an unpopular position, I think. Advice is necessarily unprofessional. This is not what a therapist tells you. In fact, if anyone out there in Radioland or in our studio audience has had experience with therapy, you may know that one of the most frustrating things about it is that your therapist will never tell you what to do. That is what is so charming about the possibility of advice columnists. You actually get something concrete. There are times, perhaps, when that is inappropriate, and in those times, your letter will likely vanish into the ether. There are, of course, for every letter that's published, countless thousands that wither away. But here, Savage is able to pick out exactly those questions that merit specific answer and give the information that's needed. He also uses a strategy that I'd like to point out as being quite useful. It's one that, for example, Miss Manners does not need. Miss Manners is her own expert. There is no question that she cannot answer. Another example. Dear Miss Manners, my husband and I attended the opening performance of a major orchestra. We had excellent seats, the second box in the first balcony, and were seated with five other couples that we did not know. Three of those five couples spoke multiple times during the orchestra's performance of Mahler's Second Symphony. I was at a loss about what to do. Whispering during movies is so common now that I know that I've lost that battle, but I'm not ready to give up the fight at a performance of one of the finest orchestras in the world. Would it be appropriate to make a general statement to our box before the performance begins? I'm thinking of something like this. I'm sure nobody in this box would think of it, but let's all agree not to whisper to our companions during the performance. Or would it be more appropriate to wait for the intermission and speak directly to anyone who has spoken during the first piece? Gentle reader, the best defense is a good offense. Look at Miss Manners getting all sporty. But that said, the approach you're considering is just slightly condescending and prissy. Those with rebellious leanings might want to defy you just for the fun of it. Instead, you might tell a cautionary tale of the aforementioned event in which people were so brazen as to speak during the performance, presuming the current attendants were not among them. This will make your point without directly implicating your new companions. Enough said. That's perfect advice. Now, as stated, Ms. Manners is her own expert. But Savage also serves, I believe when we were discussing this backstage before, the term that I introduced was clearinghouse. Savage serves as a conduit, and he often takes questions that are outside of his area of expertise, whether that's on sexual health or pregnancy or lesbian relationships, which he admittedly has not personally experienced. He outsources them. Which I believe is perfectly acceptable advice strategy. Now that we've had an introduction, a brief introduction, though it was, I think we are now at the time to answer some questions from the audience and from the kids listening at home. This one just came in over the airways from my producer. I'm concerned that my cat has emotional issues. Her behavior has been erratic, and either she is trying to enter human language or she's just plain mad. I love my cat and don't want to upset her further, but cannot afford to send her to therapy or buy her the expensive juice cleanses she desires. What should I do? Yours, Ayn. Now, we've seen a number of approaches this evening. I could respond with a pithy remark. Well, buddy, if your cat is looking for juice, I'd say you've got bigger problems. For example, that one also fitting the Ann Landers mode of not being particularly funny. I also need to abstract from my own personal experience as a human in the world and as an advice giver, and to see what I'm not hearing here. The cat's behavior has been erratic. What could erratic mean? What is erratic for a cat? Erratic is a highly subjective description. Then again, there's some very concrete information here. I cannot afford to send her to therapy. So I know, as the advice giver, that therapy, which has long been the recourse of a cowardly advice columnist, sending the letter writer to therapy is no less than shameful, in my opinion. That has been totally ruled out. Now, assuming that the reference to expensive juice cleanses is a joke to entertain the studio audience, and I do hear some chuckles coming in into the studio, we can take seriously the question of emotional issues. Cats can be erratic for a number of reasons. Cats, like all animals, appreciate consistency. It can sometimes be startling to humans, who are well adapted to change, how easily a change in the cat's routine can cause it to fly into a tizzy, even to enter human language. Think, has there been a change lately? Certainly you know your cat better than I do. I'm merely a radio advice columnist. If there has been no external change, perhaps the change is an internal one. Is the cat entering a new phase in life? Is she spayed? If not, perhaps she's going into heat. Or, if she is, perhaps she's simply approaching retirement. My advice would be to talk to the cat. Now, I realize that cats don't talk. But have you tried? Are there any questions from the studio audience? Once again, that number is 610-716-7380. I'd also like to invite my apprentice advice givers out there to weigh in on advice possibilities. Now, let us take a classic Ann Landers. Dear Mrs. Landers, I am a girl of 14. And I like a certain boy, and I'm sure he likes me, but when it comes time to meet, he gets scared and backs out. I am deeply troubled. Signed, SB. Can we suggest any advice for this young girl of 14? What would you do, and how do you think Ann Landers would respond? How might Miss Manners respond? Any suggestions from the audience?
Can I hear one more time?
Dear Mrs. Landers, I am a girl of 14, and I like a certain boy, and I'm sure he likes me. But when it comes time to meet, he gets scared and backs out. I am deeply troubled. Now, we have explored a number of different methodologies tonight, but I don't in any way want to suggest that those are the only available. But you're free to choose among them, if that helps you order your thoughts.
Well, I would say to our young female writer that at that age, sometimes encountering a young woman can be very scary. And this doesn't necessarily mean it has anything to do with her or her approach or the way she looks or acts. But maybe keep trying. Hopefully can break down his cool attitude, because it's probably just character armor at this point. It has very little to do with how he actually feels.
Sounds like pretty solid advice to me. Studio audience, what do you think? How about some applause? Oh. Wow, they like that one. Okay, settle down, guys. Okay, popular advice. Any alternative advice out there?
I think there are two clear problems presented. One is that this fellow is flaking on her, and two, that she is deeply troubled. And they're
it's almost
not,
like a Miss Manners Dear Abby mashup.
Yeah, and indeed, and they are not necessarily causally related, at least not in the world of the letter. The letter presents both of them as facts, not as connected facts. So an approach I would suggest would be to A, possibly take the bull by the horns vis-a-vis this relationship issue and address the deeply troubled thing by going to therapy. Because they may be two separate issues, and being deeply troubled sounds like something that, you know, you can work out through the scope and course of a longer running relationship, maybe with a good partner. But if this is the subject of a single letter and you're packing these two things into the same letter, then, you know, you're just go for a professional right away. You won't necessarily get the I say go for it. I say stop making vague arrangements to meet and just sort of jump on it when the arrangements be at the time when one is making the arrangement. Instead of making the arrangement, make a move. And independently of that, if that doesn't solve your deeply troubled problem, which I have almost no faith that it will, seek help. If that is indeed a problem you want help with, you know, or if you're comfortable to let that go, then relax with it.
Relax. Relax with it. Good advice indeed. Okay. Some modest applause from our vast and numerous studio audience this evening. Any final thoughts?
My advice to our writer would be not to marry either of them. She's just only 14 and has plenty of time. And when she does meet the one, she will flip her lid instead of a coin.
Well, I'd say the eyes have it, folks. This has been another edition of The Price is Right. Happy Passover.
Wow.
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 Wow. I just can't help but say, in terms of the Price is Right thing, have your pets neutered and spayed. That's the most popular Bob Barker line that I know of.
Yeah, that's, and you know what else that is? That's great advice.
That's great advice.
That is just really good
advice.
That
is good advice. Don't let things get out of control.
Yeah. Man, you know, it's surprising. I was thinking before the show when Julia told us and the entire audience that she's going to be talking about advice, how rare that has been on the talking show. We receive almost no advice, so much poetry, so little advice.
You know, it's almost like people feel like we're beyond help.
I didn't think see that as an implication. I projected it onto society as a whole. Maybe society is beyond help, but you're probably right. That's good advice.
There are advice shows on K-Chan.
There are?
Yeah, Gaia Woods has an advice show.
Okay.
I mean, they're not on Wednesday nights before the talking show, so I can't vouch right. for anything about what goes on yeah. on those
they
advice
definitely
shows.
Don't happen on Too True.
No, Too True is
no,
not an
that
advice
is
show.
Four on the floor.
And
for,
so we have nothing to offer right. in terms of guiding listeners to the other advice low-key
yeah.
on K-Chan. But,
well, Steve, when you need advice on a difficult subject, where do you go?
I so rarely need advice. I feel This is possibly very, I don't know what this is about me, but I feel like most of my problems have to be solved by me alone. Like, that it's a crisis in my subjectivity, and that...
No inputs would help?
I can't. I just can't.
Yeah.
Which sounds like an ideal case, actually, for therapy. Like, in terms of seek help, like, that's actually what seek help means, is, like, you can't, so you should.
Right.
Yourself?
I guess it depends on the subject. For work stuff, I go to my girlfriend. For girlfriend stuff, I go to my brother. Those are two solid ones for me right now.
As an only child, I guess I just got used to like deal with it.
Yeah.
You're in it alone.
Yeah.
That is a primal move. We just unearthed a primal spot. I would never write to a newspaper.
No, I don't think I would either.
I would gladly answer those questions.
But Steve's total punishment column?
I would never ask. Yeah, I don't know.
The answer to most, the advice for most questions would just be next. Next question.
Do better next time. No, I honestly feel like the advice offered recently was not so bad. Like, go for it.
Yeah.
If he's shy, overcome him.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was.
Chances are that's what he's after.
And doesn't know it yet.
You could fulfill both of your dreams.
Mm-hmm. Aim high.
In one swoop.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess maybe that should wrap it up for tonight.
Fulfill your dreams in one scoop.
One scoop in one swoop. Yeah, it was very special to have Julie on the show.
It was
break
great
down
to have Julie on the show.
Advice structurally for us
to slice through all of that chit chat,
that crazy 11 layer dip that is advice,
especially in the media landscape of the 40s through 80s.
Yeah. Well, I encourage all the listeners out there to seek advice or therapy.
Get help.
Good night, Chinatown.
Get help.
Sleep tight.
Help. Get it.